As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. Weirdly, we have no football match to reflect on. That's the way the week has been for Manchester United. But instead, this is our last podcast of 2023. So we're going to take stock of the entire year, of the entire situation for Manchester United, run through the games that United have between now and the new year, and also look at where the club is headed in 2024. The only way to do that, of course, was to get the full band together for one last play. Carl Anker, Laurie Whitwell, Andy Mitten, good morning all.
Hi.
Morning.
Morning.
That was sheepish, Andy.
They got progressively croakier then, didn't they? Are we all right?
Yeah, I may have gone out to Castle Hotel in Northern Quarter for a couple of orange juices last night.
Continued his partying from the weekend, Mr. Anker. That's what you do with a free week. Andy, is this just what the sixth generation of life sounds like?
I'm not as bad as you sounded the other day, mate. Is this you coming back because you got loads of grief the other day for sounding like death warmed up?
I was in no fit state to respond the other day, but I'm back now, so I'm happy to talk about your situation. How did you spend your 50th birthday? Was it on a flight and did you enjoy it?
I spent 16 hours of it on a flight. My birthday was 29 hours because of a time difference.
Good way of doing it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if sitting on a flight in economy to the other side of the world sounds like glamorous with two kids.
You don't fly business, Andy?
I wish, mate.
Well, it sounds like he normally flies business, but he just sort of put that in because it's like so bad in economy, you know.
I wish I did, but I don't. I also had two daughters having arguments with each other, which is a buzz in the middle of a plane. But yeah, I'm
when
fine.
You just turned 50 as well.
I don't sound fine. I don't look fine. I can't even use the excuse of jet lag because you're just flying pretty far south. There's only a 3-hour time difference. But I did wake up at 6 sweating in the morning for you lot, and I'm starting to regret that now.
Well, I'm glad you did, mate. Thank you very much. And I'm also glad that so many of you sent in so many brilliant questions for us. We've got a huge Q&A, basically, to form this podcast as we go through the different aspects of Manchester United at the moment. But before we go any further, we need to say congratulations to the 2023 BBC Sports Personality of the Year, our very own Mary Earps. Fantastic, Carl.
Absolutely amazing. A triumph. You think about her football achievements and how she was such an integral piece of the women's team that came so close to doing the double in the Super League, getting to the World Cup final with the Lionesses as well, saving a penalty and doing what you want your goalkeeper to do after saving a penalty, some authoritative language. And also one thing I love about Mary Earps is if you go to Leigh Sports Village at full time, there are times where she will not move for 2 hours. She will sign autographs, pose with selfies, talk to many, 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 many United fans. And she doesn't have to do that, but she chooses to. And I think that's why she's won this award. It's okay, you know, there are some amazing athletes who've done some amazing things sporting-wise this year. But in terms of how many people Mary Earps has inspired, we're talking millions of people up and down this country. So congratulations to her, and please don't go to Arsenal.
Yeah, I think we all concur with that. Embarrassing Nike into selling England goalkeeper shirts was a highlight as well, Laurie, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Dan Sheldon's done a really good piece on the mural that was painted in Manchester more recently on the side of a house and kind of like the economics of that kind of decision. I think they only got paid like £500 or something for allowing their house to be daubed with such a beautiful image. But yeah,
so, must be a United fan, well, surely.
Read the article, but they are not a United fan.
They should have got more than £500 then.
Well, I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe they're just not really appreciating the significance of it and kind of thinking, yeah, we'll accept any offer, when actually they probably could have got a bit higher.
Yeah, I think they could have. There's a piece there then to read from Dan about Mary Earp's achievement. And Andy, Carl's right. United need to keep hold of her. It was one of the coups of the summer that they managed to do that, and hopefully a strong showing in the second half of the season in the WSL is the way to do it.
Well, United lost two of the best, maybe even the best players last season. The economics of the women's game are changing rapidly. I've had people say that she's off, this is the final season. I had people saying exactly the same thing a year ago about Honor and Alessia Russo. She's an important part to Manchester United's women's future, and you don't sell your best players at any level of football.
Situation to keep an eye on then, certainly. Mary's not the only one up for awards, though. We're delighted to say that we've been nominated once again in the category of Best Team Podcast at the Sports Podcast Awards. You can vote for us if you'd like to. We'll stick the details about how to do that in the notes of this show, and we'll also put it out on our social media accounts over the next few days as well. But you can vote now, so go and have a look at that if you want to back us. We'd love your support as always. Right, let's get into it then. 2023, it started great for Manchester United. It's ended not so great. How would you sum it up, Andy?
You're asking me at a pretty low time, but at the start of the season, it was really, really decent. Manchester City were defeated in January. That was definitely one of the high points. I remember being inside Old Trafford for that and thinking, got to hold on. And then a month later, United not only won a first trophy since 2017, but had those two great games against Barcelona. I remember little moments. I remember Xavi Hernandez, the Barcelona manager, speaking glowingly of Manchester United, of the power of the tactical acumen of the manager, and genuinely thinking Manchester United are on the way back here, because Xavi Hernandez, and I've been interviewing him for 15, 20 years, I feel that he really knows his stuff. And then it sort of percolated out into nothingness. March became April, became May. The FA Cup final was so disappointing, although the semi-final against a really good Brighton team was a top game of football. And then we'll move into this season, but highlights, Chelsea was all right a few weeks ago, but they were all at the start of the year. You know, there's a win at Leeds. That was when Manchester United won away matches. At the start of the year, we were really worried, or toward the end of last season, we were really worried about Manchester United not being able to beat top teams away from home. As the year came to a close, we were worried about far more serious things. Where's the formidable home form gone? Why was Old Trafford a fortress and no longer a fortress? And just look at the league table, out of Europe. But I'm sure we'll talk about the negative.
Yeah, if we have to.
It's not that bad. Cheer up.
Well, actually, Carl, you can bring this up if you like then. Ryan Meeser on email, and also Jesse as well in Johannesburg, South Africa, have both asked for our personal highlights of this year. In fact, Jesse says, what's been your best moment, favourite experience of being able to report, interview, or even write about the club that you've supported your whole life? What do you reckon?
I have to say, we all had a big old laugh in the mix zone after the League Cup final, didn't we?
Yeah, about your socks.
So, you know, first trophy in 6.5 years. We're all in a mix zone in various places at Wembley, texting each other, where are you, where are you, where are you? Where are you? We've got to do this podcast. Bing, bang, bing, bang, boom. We're all stood in this belly of the beast, I want to say, for about 25 minutes, craning our heads, trying to get a look at Fergie and the Glazers and whatnot. Andy's cracking a joke, trying to get in with the Brazilian journalist because they're trying to have a chat with Casemiro. Lloris's been doing an interview and he goes, Erik ten Hag told a joke in the press conference. He never tells jokes. So he got that going on. And
I was so excited about Wana.
I know.
He forgot the cup.
He forgot the cup.
He'd win more.
I know. I mean, we really thought he would. We thought the Europa League was coming. We thought the FA Cup was coming.
Okay.
So there was that. And we went so long without winning the trophy. And just that feeling after winning that League Cup, it was just like, this is it. We're sorted. We're a serious football team now. And I do always remember there was a bit where in this mix zone, I had a handshake with Marcus and he walked past. But before, I'd say 5 minutes before, I just keep hearing this noise on the subwoofer. Oof, 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 oof. And we're going, what's that noise? Oof, 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 oof. What's going on?
Good noise, by
and
the
then
way.
In comes Jadon Sancho and he is holding one of the biggest sound systems you've ever seen in your life. We're talking briefcase size. And he's like, yes, boys, how are you all doing? And he's parading his League Cup trophy. I was just like, this is fun. This is great. I've just covered a football team win a trophy and everyone seems really, really happy. And it seems like they're going to be happy forever. So, yeah, that's a personal highlight for me.
Yeah, I think we all can concur with that. We all felt that emotion on the day at Wembley, definitely. And doing the podcast on the steps with the arch being red and all that nonsense was great, wasn't it? I think for me, it was leaving my dad, having watched United knock Barcelona out of Europe and walking around from our seats in the North Stand round to the press area to meet you three. And just seeing these fans flooding out of the turnstiles with huge grins on their faces, hugging each other, high-fiving strangers, singing UNIT. And it just, that little bit of quality, that little bit of electricity almost, that's what United have been missing. That's what we've been missing as supporters over the last few years. Even as journalists sat there, you still get it, even though you're trying to keep it down in your belly, being professional in the press box and wherever else you're working. That just uncontrollable excitement, really, that makes you do weird things. That's been the highlight of 2023 for me. What do you reckon, Laurie?
I would definitely echo Carabao Cup a little bit because I was able to get tickets for my wife, her dad, my cousin, my dad, and they all sort of watched it together. So it was just like a nice family experience and they hadn't had that for a long time. But then also, it might sound absolutely mad, but Sevilla away, when I'm sat next to Andy...
Chips.
Well, obviously, that's where I'm going, right? The best chips of the year in Seville. For God's sake, you've done me. He's on it today, isn't he, Andy?
He is.
And there's actually maybe a mention of that later in the show, perhaps. But it was just being around that stadium and how bouncing it was. And we'd had Betis, in the same city called Betis earlier in the competition. And just sort of, you're just kind of appreciating that this is, I know it wasn't United focus and it wasn't the best night for them, far from it, quite the opposite, but just sort of being in this kind of vibrant atmosphere and obviously touching on what you said there, Ian, in terms of that's the essence of football, right? That you've got this community feel to it, bringing people together, extreme emotions. And in this case for Sevilla, it was joy, incredible noise, great synchronicity about what they were doing. So that was fantastic. And I just sort of thought, this is what a privilege this is to kind of be in this atmosphere, this arena. And then I also kind of thought the same thing when I was on a boat in San Diego, having one too many margaritas and Andy rolling his eyes at me and thinking, what are you doing? But also the stadium in San Diego was great as well. It was like a kind of open air and you could see the mountains in the distance. And, they had the big US flag that kind of got drawn across the pitch by volunteers. So that was, just ridiculous. And I'm kind of being very selfish there, aren't I? Because that's not an experience that a lot of United fans had, American fans did, and you could sense the real sort of connection that they felt they had to the club as well, which I thought was an eye-opener as well. But just the fact that this job, this club allows you to kind of go to these kind of places that you probably wouldn't ordinarily go to.
There are questions about low lights. I'm not going to do it, to be honest. I know people would probably want to know, but I think we could list them. I think you already know. It feels like the moment for Manchester United is a bit of a low light as well in the FA Cup final and whatever else. So I don't want to dwell on that. Let's keep it upbeat. Favourite goal of the year, David asks on email, Andy.
Is there any choice of who you choose here? I mean, that Garnacho goal at Everton.
It's Diogo Dalo who pulls the ball back across. Garnacho! That is outstanding! A spectacular goal!
I don't think I've ever been in a stadium where I've seen an overhead kick as good as that. And I was there on the day that Rooney scored his in the Manchester derby. That was unbelievable, what we've just seen.
I set off, I was going to Goodison Park, right? And then my daughter became ill, so I didn't go to Goodison Park. So I watched the game on television with my daughter, my youngest daughter, who loves football. I've been struggling to get her to be in love with Manchester United because it's difficult to fancy someone who ain't that great at the moment. And Garnacho scored that goal, and she just walked up to the TV and said, I've never seen a goal as good as that in my life. And it was just wonderful because she was poorly and she suddenly became better because of Garnacho's healing qualities as he pulled back in front of the park end and smashed it. And that was a game most people thought United would lose. Mm. Everton were favourites. Everton are not a bad team, as we're now seeing with results. And so to go ahead early on, something United really struggled to do, was a beautiful ball in. Garnacho all day long. I can't believe anyone will say anything else, but maybe for... Well, there you go. Everyone's shrugging their shoulders.
Anyone disagree?
Well, you can't disagree with the quality, just but from a kind of personal point of view, I wasn't there, so you were, Carl, weren't you? So
I was.
So maybe you could make a case for Antony's against Barcelona, just because of the atmosphere and being there. You're rolling your eyes, Ian. I'm just trying to give the guy a little bit of credit where it's due.
During the lockdown, Michael Cox wrote a great series of some of the greatest goals of all time. And he said there are three types of great goal. There's the exceptional hit, there's the dribble, and there's the team goal. And United are very, very, very good at the exceptional hit. We've got loads of players who, outside of the box, every now and again will go, I'm having this. We've probably got too many players that get the ball in the outside of the box and go, I'm having this.
And don't have it.
Yeah. I think of goals like Bruno Fernandes against Galatasaray. That was a goal got me out of my seat and made the proper guttural, what have you done, noise. Casemiro had a little bicycle kick against Bournemouth towards the end of last season. That got me in a bit of a tears as well. Marcus Rashford's great goal against Nottingham Forest in the first leg of the League Cup. I really, really like that goal because that was old school Marcus taking the ball. I'm having this, dribbling from one end to the penalty box. But he scored with his weak foot. And again, that was a real like, here we go. We're going to get it. We're getting world-class Rashford for the rest of our lives. And it hasn't quite panned out, but that was a goal that got me very, very excited too.
I love the offside goal in the derby because even to this day, every time you look at it, it's definitely offside. There's no question about it. Absolutely fantastic.
We were kicking our feet and giggling in Old Trafford talking about that one in January. Absolutely. That's the exact giggle.
A scandalous goal. Perfect.
This is Casemiro. Rashford, is he on? Bruno Fernandes! The flag is up. Fernandes runs to the assistant. He's saying that he wasn't offside.
But Rashford was.
I love the celebration at Arsenal away for that offside goal as well. I was in the away end. No way did I expect United to win at Arsenal. It was just brilliant. It was a great celebration. I mean, how does your body work? Is that taken back from you? Because at that moment, I was happy. Is it better to have that moment
genuine,
than,
isn't it?
Than not to have it?
better to have loved and lost than to have not loved at all, Andy.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it was ruled out and everyone was laughing at us then. But at the time, it felt brilliant.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, with no podcast to the new year, like I said at the top, we've got a few matches to look forward to. We also have our Christmas dinner to look forward to, don't we? And Dave on Twitter has asked, does Laurie have chips with his Christmas dinner?
For God's sake, Andy, as a castaway line, has brought this up and it's still haunting me. But yes, Dave, I do. No, I don't. I have roast potatoes, obviously. Lots of them.
Can you imagine Andy hunting around the lower reaches of Brazil for cheese over these next few days?
Well, exactly.
Days as well.
That's exactly.
Be a,
good point.
A desperate search if I've ever seen one. Right, let's talk about the matches. West Ham away, Aston Villa at home, and Nottingham Forest away with a new manager. Could be kinder, Carl, couldn't it?
Could be, but also these are games where if you're not getting at least 6 points, what are we doing here? So I'll be going to West Ham. I'll be going to the City Ground in Nottingham as well. And I'm expecting tough times. You know, I'm not expecting clean sheets, but I want some goals. I want some wins. I want to United to win by more than one goal scored. And I'm hoping a couple more players get fit, especially by January time. Relax, go into that more relaxed January schedule that United can have a proper tilt at that top four place.
We seem to be quite unlucky, Andy, at teams changing managers just before we face them. And Nottingham Forest appointing Nuno. Steve Cooper's popular with the Forest fans for obvious reasons, bringing them up after a long time and reconnecting a supporter base with a club, which is often underestimated for managers, and people from the outside don't always completely understand that. But I think Nuno probably will make them tougher, harder to beat. You're looking at five of the back, like he's played at Wolves and Spurs in the past with wing-backs. Villa at home, pretty much the informed team in the Premier League at the moment. And despite West Ham having five not past them in the League Cup against Liverpool, they've actually been okay lately as well, haven't they? And it's David Moyes again and everything else that goes with that. So it does look tricky.
Yeah, I think the worst example of the new manager bounce was when Unai Emery came in at Aston Villa last season and suddenly they started looking like primetime Brazil in 1970 against a Manchester United team who weren't doing so badly at the time. I don't think Forest technically should be troubling Manchester United, but when the new manager comes in, everything changes. A lot of the analysis in the lead up to the matches changes because you don't quite know what the new manager is going to do, how they're going to play tactically, which players they're going to use. So it's a negative, not a positive. And Forest, if we're picking out highlights, I thought, you know, the atmosphere at the City Ground is really good. Going back to the semi-final last January, but it was brilliant when it only holds 30,000, but I think Forest were really enjoying life back in the Premier League. But United had a couple of wins there in 2023. How many away grounds can we say that for? There was a win in the Cup and in the league also when Anthony Martial had a good game. That's notable because that only happened twice in 2023.
Yeah.
United have got to be beating Forest. Come on.
Do you get a new manager bounce when the manager's Nuno Espirito Santo? Like, obviously, I know what he did at Wolves. Got him promoted, but he's not like big personality. Here we go, lads. We're going to turn this around.
That's the manager of the month from August 2021.
How do you know this detail?
He won manager of the month on his first when he rocked up at Spurs. Three games, 3-1-0 wins.
Oh, did he? Right. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, and then got sacked the next
that's
month.
Pretty
I think.
Much it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's got a good agent. Let's just say
the
that.
The point of difference between the style of football Jose Mourinho plays and the style of football Nuno players is not that big, obviously, because they work together at Porto. I like Nuno. He's a very practical man. And I mean that partially as a compliment and also partially as a, I don't like watching your football too much.
I didn't used to like going to his press conferences. It was literally pointless.
Okay, you're a big fan of Nuno then, Laurie.
I don't know why I've got, maybe I've woke up on the wrong side 30th. Of the morning, but yeah, just, I don't know. I just think United should be going there and winning.
I take it you're not going to the City Ground.
I'm not going to the City Ground.
Here's a question for you. Nottingham Forest, Anthony Langer, the way the season's gone so far, do you miss him?
He's played well. I think he's shown, it's what you want from an academy product that is then sold. Could they have got more? Maybe. I don't know. I think fair enough in terms of the price and the point at which you sell him. But he has shown he's got qualities, right? But he plays on the left predominantly. Is he really going to get many games? I know Marcus Rashford's not having a great season, but you've got Garnacho there as well. You know, would he have... At Forest, he's got the platform to play like that. A lot of the good performances have been off the bench, right, when he's been up against sort of defences that have perhaps been a bit tiring. It's been nice to see, actually, the quality that he's got and the way that he's, you know, taken on a new club.
Yeah, it has been fun to watch him, actually. I've been to Forest a few times and seen Anthony, and he's just very, very happy, very settled. Seems like a good group of players there. He's good friends with Hudson-Odoi and a few of the others, so he seems happy. It's quite nice to see someone go and do that, isn't it? Sorry, Andy.
I was about to tell you a good story about Nuno, how I used to know his English girlfriend and played football with his son, but then I realised I'd mixed him up with Kike Sanchez-Flores, so that's not going on the podcast.
These things happen at your age, mate. Don't worry about it. Right, next question then. Sam and Hamid, I'm going to combine their questions, if that's all right. Carl, I'll come to you on it. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, is he unlucky to be missing out at the moment? And what role do you see Mason Mount playing moving forward?
Ooh, these are good questions. Wan-Bissaka always feels like two good training sessions away from getting back in the starting lineup. And that is probably to the detriment of Diogo Dalot, in that Dalot offers far more in possession. I think if you have to sell one, which United might have to do one day eventually if they want to start winning the bigger trophies, I think there's more purpose in keeping Dalot than Wan-Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka's 1v1 defending, very, very good. But, you know, back post defending, crosses, etc., etc., etc. And yet, there are times where I watch Dalot play and I go, Wan-Bissaka can jump ahead of you in the queue if he just trains really hard in Carrington this week. So Dalot won't play against West Ham. Wan-Bissaka will be there. And Wan-Bissaka's got a half decent, you know, give and go 1-2 in the final third. So he will have a purpose between now and the end of the season. There's going to be two or three games where you go, yep, this is it. Wan-Bissaka's turned a corner. But you're also going to have one or two games in the year where you go, oh no, Wan-Bissaka, not so. Mason Mount, my thing with Mason Mount is I really want to see him on the right wing. I think Man United's best, everyone's fit. I think Man United's best central midfield is Casemiro, Cobby like Robbie, and Bruno Fernandes as a 10. And then if you want to put Mason Mount in there, which I think you can if you want to press really high up, put him on the right-hand side ahead of Anthony.
Excellent. Let's speed this up a little bit then. So you've answered that, I think. Laurie, this is Preyan's question. Could McTominay be used as a makeshift centre-forward? And we should really mention that we forgot to talk about him being captain at Anfield, which definitely wasn't my fault on the last podcast.
We forgot it. I thought we were going to claim like we deliberately saved it for the... A really good topic on the last podcast.
I don't like to lie to our audience.
Fine, yeah, okay. We did kind of forget.
I wasn't in a great shape, was I? So, you know.
Well, you know, I could have, you know, interrupted and said I was at the game and he was wearing the captain's armband and I also forgot. So, you
okay,
know,
it's
I'm,
your
I'm,
fault.
I'm sharing the
perfect
burden. Because people were, I said that he was like the kind of, not obvious, but like it made the most sense in that circumstance to give him the captaincy in terms of he's on a good run of form. It's at Anfield, so you know it's going to be a bit, you know, tempestuous. He's a guy that likes to get in there but doesn't get sent or doesn't go overboard and kind of loses emotion so that he kind of gets in trouble with the authorities. I don't know why I said authorities, like the officials, like the referees, some kind of Greater Manchester Police.
Never going to get arrested.
and Luke Shaw just coming back from an injury, and is he a bit of a leader, but he's not the most vocal. So, and then people are saying Rafael Varane, but then or Johnny Evans, but I don't know, that it feels like their sort of return to the team, you know, I don't know, to then give him the armband as well. Maybe it's quite a lot. So I don't know. I thought McTominay was the right choice as captain. And, you know, when you reflect on it, United got a better result than what people were expecting. So you'd have to say it worked. In terms of him being a makeshift centre forward, well, yeah, he can definitely be a makeshift centre forward, can't he? I think as he showed against Brentford coming on late, you can be that presence in the box, getting on the end of things, finishing. He's really sharp at finishing. You know, he's kind of one touch, two touch. You know, it's really up there in terms of what other players can offer in that those kind of situations. But you really, his best role, right, is breaking into the box as a kind of, you know, a kind of late runner, you know, number 10-ish kind of player. So I don't think him being the focal point from the start of a game would really be to his or the team's benefit.
Okay, super. Next question. Indy, this is to you, Andy. To what extent do you think the influence of outspoken ex-United players in the media is having an impact on the team's performance?
The players hate it. They absolutely hate it. And it's a very real issue. And the pundits are doing their job. And we've gone from a situation where football was something you used to do at the weekend to it becoming this rolling news story where there has to be a plot line every single day. So I've just got up early. I just put social media on. And it appears to be that Jurgen Klopp's criticism of the Anfield atmosphere is already pulling people in. And it doesn't even matter if there's going to be a game ahead. The other problem is that a lot of the players doing it said that they would never be pundits. So I can remember speaking to these lads on the record. A lot of them played for Manchester United when they were aged 25, 26, 27. And they felt about the pundits at the time exactly how the current players. And a couple of them even said to me, I'll never go into that line of work. And they are currently perceived to be the best. I think the standard
of what you do when you're bored, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the standard of what they do is very high. I think they work incredibly hard. I'm talking about people like Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, the number of games they go to stay on top of the games. I think they're very good on TV. Their tactical analysis is excellent. Roy Keane's become this sort of pantomime figure playing on this. He's always been someone who people are attracted to. And he looks like he's enjoying life in his mid-50s. There is hope for all of us seeing Roy Keane like this.
Yep.
I'm engaged when, you know, Roy Keane sets up Instagram, and I really am. Give me more. You're a fascinating person. You're not boring. You're really, really interesting. You know your stuff. You're all world-class players. But I would be lying if I said that the current players do not absolutely despise the criticism which comes their way. What should happen? You know, if the team play badly, fans are often far more critical of the pundits. But there's this huge demand for content, and we're part of that. You know, the pundits are doing their live shows in arenas. We're doing our live shows in theatres as well. That was another highlight of 2023, by the way. Going on the road, London, Manchester, Belfast, Dublin.
Amazing.
We had a great time doing that. But yeah, it pisses the players right off.
Yeah, and I think that you picked up on it before, the rolling aspect. I'm not just talking about 24-hour news channels. I'm talking about social media. I'm talking about, well, things like The Athletic. You know, that's what the players these days have to suffer, that a lot of the players in the past didn't. When they have a bad performance, they are reminded of different aspects of it over and over and over again. And I think when there's a particular point, a bit like with Van Dijk and Keane, I suppose, at the weekend, as that continues throughout the week, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and I think the players involved get more and more annoyed about it. But unfortunately, that's just modern media. Speaking of modern media, next question, ironically, is from a fan whose name is hard to pronounce. So I think it's Arobian. Apologies in advance. It's quite ironic that I've struggled with that name, because their question is, why do you bend over backwards to learn how to pronounce Telles, Hoyland, and Kobbie-Mainoo?
Tell us.
You pronounce Victor Lindelof like he's an American screenwriter. Carl, do you know who this American screenwriter is?
Oh, he wrote Lost.
Oh, right. It's a specific person.
Lindelof wrote Lost and Prometheus and whatnot. So when one of my very first pieces I ever wrote...
I knew you'd
that's
know.
That's good knowledge.
When I came up to Man United, I said, you know, there's an American screenwriter called Lindelof who's known for writing things that are confusing, have loads of plot twists. Anyway, Victor Lindelof is a bit confusing because no one knows how good he is, and he's always got a plot twist waiting.
So should it be Vindelof? Should it be... go on.
I'm going to help you. It's all right. Just calm down one moment. I'm going to help you. So, Arabian, this is for you.
Victor Lindelof.
That sounds quite similar to what we're saying, doesn't it?
Well, maybe it's the emphasis on love rather than loth.
Okay.
But I don't think it's a major scandal. Am I speaking out of turn?
It's a good point of consideration, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope you're happy, Arabian. We've tried.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right, 2024. That's the year ahead for Manchester United. And remember, there is an offer on for 2024. You can gift a subscription for 1 year to The Athletic at the special discounted price of just £19.99 to a friend or a family member or anyone else that you'd like to. If you want to do that, sign up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Looking ahead, I guess the takeover or non-takeover investment situation is the thing that we need to keep a close eye on. So Brian asks Andy, takeover update please, and also how is Andy coping with being really old?
Thanks for that one. I've got no update from last week, and that was only 4 days ago that I gave the last update. In fact, it was 3 days ago. I would expect it to go through. In an ideal world, it will bring about positive changes for Manchester United. There will be money spent on infrastructure, the club will be leaner, the football side of things will improve. I realise we've been saying it could go through in the next 2 weeks, for 20-odd weeks, but I would expect it to go through. It's a very complex deal. Jim Ratcliffe likes very complex deals. He's got one on his hands, and the optimist in me hopes that it will be a good thing, but I've got amber flags all over the shop as to what happens, who comes in. I think sometimes football fans just think that the grass is always greener. Get rid, changed a lot. And actually, you end up losing a lot of good people when you make changes. So has to be done with care. But we're talking at an end of the year when things have not been so great. I'm glad someone mentioned Brentford, by the way. That was a high. Them two last-minute goals when Scott came on. I felt brilliant after that. So yeah, hopefully within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, let's see. Because you've said that several times, and I know that was an ironic finish considering it always seems to be in the next 2 weeks. On the point of changing members of staff, Laurie, Lars on Twitter, lots of names seem to be in the frame for the sporting director role. Any truth in the Dan Ashworth links? How about Paul Mitchell or Michael Edwards?
Yeah, lots of names out there. I think that's because the suggestion, the indication is that Ineos will want to appoint a sporting director and also a kind of transfer specialist underneath. So you've got these kind of two different tiers almost of people that are being linked, and you're kind of thinking, how will that all fit in? Dan Ashworth, he'd been wanted by United previously before he went to Newcastle. It didn't quite work out the structure that he was going to go into at that point. Talks never really progressed at all, but I'm led to believe that he is someone that Ineos are interested in. Same with Paul Mitchell and Michael Edwards, although I think Michael Edwards has got his own consultancy. I'm not sure how interested he is in going into a club right now. Paul Mitchell's obviously from the local area. He's been linked, before, and we'll see how that one shakes down. Obviously got experience in the industry and making transfers happen. So, but there's definitely, talk progressing. Sir Dave Brailsford being the point guard for Sir Jim Ratcliffe on the ground, looking to start getting his hands on the actual structure, albeit, it's difficult to then have concrete conversation with people when it's not been absolutely rubber stamped.
Yeah, we'll leave it there because there's going to be lots of talk and lots of coverage on The Athletic about this investment as things progress over the next 2 weeks. Like Andy's just said, or maybe the 2 weeks after that, we'll find out in due course, obviously. January obviously also brings the transfer window in 2024, Carl. So Chris is asking, will the Saudi Pro League give us an opportunity to get transfer fees from wanted players? Hopefully not Varane or Casemiro, but either of those two leaving soon? ?
I mean, if you talk to me about this in November, it seemed as if the direction of travel was Rafa Varane, possibly courting offers from Saudi Arabia, but I mean, he's back in the starting lineup now and seems to be in fine fettle, possibly even talking about his contract. Is that correct, Laurie?
Well, the news came out that he didn't actually have his contract until 2025 confirmed. That was a nice little story we managed to put out there. It was actually 2024 plus one, so he's actually a free agent as things stand. I mean, United can trigger the clause. It's unclear exactly whether there's some kind of appearance to automatically trigger it if he makes a certain number of appearances. But yeah, Saudi, I was told that he wasn't particularly interested in going to Saudi in January or in the summer, not at this stage in his career. But clearly, it's an aspect that United are looking at, given the way that he was out of the team, and it's an interesting situation for them to observe, I suppose. From early indications, the Saudi Pro League, they're full on quotas. So can they actually register any players? Can they actually sign anybody for big money? From what we're hearing from people that understand that terrain, the answer is no. So any sort of sales that direction would perhaps have to wait till summer.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that situation as well. Last question of the podcast. I'm going to put this out to each of you, and if you give a fairly quick answer so we can wrap things up, that would be absolutely brilliant. So Andy, Pat asks, there are so many issues around the club. What is the one positive thing that needs to change, in your opinion, more than anything else, that will lead to sustainable success?
There's not a simple answer to that. It's multifaceted. What would you want me to say? Change the manager?
No.
By Messi. There's so, just want one thing which will lead to an improvement. Sort the football side.
Yeah, that'll do.
Carl?
Between now and the end of the season, clean bill of health.
Yeah, I like that. That's a better answer than my one.
Laurie?
I would just love for United to buy a player where you go, ooh, that was interesting, and that was a low-cost kind of purchase, or just a moderate cost. United always, it's difficult with United. They will get stung on price a little bit, but it takes craft and ingenuity and confidence and the right moment to strike for a player. And I'd love them to do that and then go, in a year, 2 years' time, that was nice. That was good work.
Yeah, that was a better answer than my one as well.
I thought you were going to say better cheese in the media room, Andy.
Yes, Carl.
My hope for the new year is stability.
Yes.
Peace to all men and women, but stability at Manchester United at every single level, from the boardroom to on the pitch.
I thought you meant stability of Andy's hair, because it's going all over the place at the moment.
Well, no one can see that at home, fortunately.
You lot try to finish the year strongly.
I think it's a tribute to Laurie.
Because of all the grief I've given you all this year. Go on, you all carry on asking for world peace. You'll be telling me that you like children and animals next.
And well, actually, on a serious note, I have written a piece that touches on this aspect, the recruitment, what the football department is like, and it's quite wide-ranging. Hopefully, it provides listeners and readers with much more information than they've had before on the topic. Keep your eyes peeled for that one. It should come out soon.
Right, that's it then for 2023 on Talk of the Devils. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Laurie. And thank you, Carl. And thank you for your company throughout this year as well. It's been an absolute privilege to do this podcast with you three every single week. So thank you so much. And more importantly, thank you to every single one of you for listening throughout this year. We absolutely love doing this, and we love having the support from you guys as well. We couldn't do it without you. So thank you from each of us very, very much. And all the very best if you're celebrating Christmas, and all the very best for 2024. We'll be back around the 4th of January. Let's hope there's some positive Manchester United news to reflect on by then. But we'll be back no matter what happens. Take care, all the best, and we'll see you in the new year. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Athletic.